This is Fresh Air. The war in the Gulf has entered a critical phase. In the next 24 hours, there could be a ceasefire, or there could be a ground war. As defense correspondent for the Sunday Times of London, James Adams has been walking the halls of the Pentagon, trying to get insights into what is most likely to happen. I asked him if he thought there was conflict or tension between the White House and the military over what the next step should be.
No, I think that they're both of one mind in that they want to get Saddam Hussein and his forces out of Kuwait in the shortest time possible. So that's not a problem. I don't think there's any disagreement, but there is certainly a degree of tension today. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Colin Powell, was, according to my sources in the Pentagon, in a pretty foul mood all day, in part reflecting the mood of his senior officers, who are all anxious to get on to the next phase. They have, after all, up to now, been allowed to prosecute the war pretty much as they felt was best. And now, just when they get to the most difficult part of the operation, the most complicated and the most sensitive, they are just about teetering on the brink, just about to go in, and then they're held back by their coattails by the politicians. So there's certainly some tension in what is an extremely nerve-wracking time.
Do you think that if the noon deadline passes without a further commitment from Iraq to leave Kuwait, that the ground war will inevitably begin?
Yes, I do, because we cannot allow ourselves, and President Bush has from the outset been determined that he would not allow himself to be trapped into a long and drawn-out negotiating process, which is the timing and terms of which are dictated by Saddam Hussein. But if he accepts that route, then we could find ourselves locked into several months of fruitless negotiation, which we cannot afford, either politically, militarily, or economically.
Do you think that Saddam Hussein has kind of timed his willingness to talk about withdrawal to the beginning of the ground war? In other words, do you think his timing is to prevent the ground war from starting?
Oh, definitely. He's a very smart operator, and he has not done this just out of the blue. He's done it because he wants, as he has always done from the outset, to buy time and to create a situation where he can make offers that he produces appear attractive to try and drive wedges in the coalition, to win political kudos among his allies, and to be able to go out with something that he can say is a victory. And that's why the President Bush has been very clear that he, Saddam Hussein, has to say, "I am withdrawing and I accept the United Nations resolutions," to take away any sense of victory, which is, of course, why one would think it unlikely that Saddam Hussein will accept the president's terms, because they rub his face in the dirt and they don't give him the victory he wants.
From your sources in the military, do you get a sense if the high command of the military really wants to fight this ground war, or if they'd be relieved and happy if there was a quick resolution that made the ground war unnecessary?
I think you when dealing with the military, you look at this on two levels. One, there is the, if you like, the gung-ho factor of, well, we're there and we'd like to go and see what happens, and it's a sort of macho courage, bravery, training, or everything all rolled up into one. But then you go to a different level, which is the more thoughtful level, where any military commander who has ever seen war does not want war, does not want to go into battle, realizes that he will lose friends, colleagues, will see carnage and death on an appalling level, particularly in this particular conflict. And there is no sensible, sane military commander that ever wants to go to war under those circumstances. And so I think they would all be slightly sort of schizophrenic about it, if you like, very pleased that you don't have to go to war, but in a sense disappointed that you don't get a chance to prove that you can do it. But the overall feeling would be one of relief.
My guest is James Adams, defense correspondent for the Sunday Times of London. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is James Adams, defense correspondent for the Sunday Times of London. I want to ask you something that I've heard a lot of people ask. I think it's become pretty clear that the United States government, and I suppose the British as well, really don't want to end this war until Saddam Hussein is out of power or has been just soundly defeated. A lot of people are asking the question, how come the CIA or other coalition intelligence hasn't tried to just target Saddam Hussein and off him, you know, assassinate him instead of waging this destructive war?
Well, there are two reasons for that. First of all, you've got to have extremely good intelligence to be able to do that. Not just intelligence that says, well, we think he was in this bunker at such and such a time, but intelligence that's good enough so that when you launch your operation, whether it be a missile strike or a special forces operation, whatever it is, when you launch it, you know that by the time the attack hits at the other end, your man is still in the same place. Real-time intelligence, and that's extremely difficult to get. We find it very difficult to track him on a day-to-day, hour-to-hour basis. We've currently got special aircraft flying 24 hours a day over Baghdad, trying to do exactly that, and it is very difficult. He's a very smart guy, and he understands about security. So that's point one. Point two, even if you do have that kind of real-time intelligence, there is, and it may sound bizarre given the war that we're currently fighting, there is a hesitancy, indeed a legal prohibition on doing the kind of thing you're talking about, the assassination. And there is also a reluctance to do that among the military, certainly among the intelligence community, who have been very badly bruised by that kind of thing in the past 25 years or so. So there is that sort of reluctance to overcome. It couldn't happen without the president's approval. You would then be operating outside the UN mandate by killing a head of a foreign government. And that's a very, very legally difficult area to go in. And I don't think anyone actually wants to particularly get involved in that. If he's killed by chance, well, fine. Nobody has a problem with that because no one signed up to it and it just kind of happened. And no one will shed any tears. But no one's going to sign a document saying, let's go knock him off, because that's really going a bit too far.
How do you think Saddam is looking right now as a military commander?
As a military commander, he's a buffoon because he has not managed... has never managed to fight his forces as a military commander. When he was prosecuting the war against Iran, he by and large left it to his military people. When he put his own hand on the tiller, it went wrong. He seems to have no clear understanding of modern warfare. His tactics or his strategy in Kuwait has been as close to lunatic as you can get in digging in, putting in 250,000 troops stuck in the sand, making them sitting targets for our aircraft. I mean, no sane commander would have done that, who had any understanding of the sort of war that was about to be fought. Now, that's not to suggest at all that he's mad or that he's not a very smart guy, because he is. He just doesn't have the requisite military experience or the training to provide the kind of leadership that if you're a dictatorship as he is, everyone looks to the leader to lead. Well, he is incapable of leading militarily because he doesn't have the experience, which is why this war so far has been much, much easier, and there's been far fewer casualties on the Allied side than was expected, because he's just not understood what's going on.
You always try to stay a step ahead of what's happening in a situation like this. What has surprised you, though, about the war so far?
I think there are two things that have been surprising. One is how much longer the air phase has taken than was originally expected. And two, how much smarter Saddam Hussein and his troops have been about with deception operations. They have been able to continue operating their Scuds, for example, which should have been destroyed in the first 48, 72 hours, for all this length of time, and are continuing to operate them. Now, that's shown, contrary to the sort of general strategy, a degree of tactical sophistication that has been very clever and has caught the Allies, I think, very much by surprise, and has been one of the reasons why the air phase has had to last so much longer, because we've devoted very substantial resources to trying to track the Scuds, and not that successfully. I mean, it's a thing that just takes a long time. And they've also used fake tanks and fake infrared signals and all that kind of thing in a very clever way, in the sort of way that we would do. And I think that's been quite a surprise.
Do you have in your mind a kind of best case and worst case scenario for how a ground war would play?
Well, the best case is that when we roll forward, they basically all come out with their hands in the air, and we take in the first 7 days, we're rolling so fast that we can't process the prisoners quickly enough, and the whole thing is over in a week, and we don't have any problems in Kuwait City, and there's a military coup, and Saddam Hussein is killed, and that's that. On the other hand, we could be in a position where we find right across in every area they are prepared to fight to the death, like, say, the Japanese were at Iwo Jima, and you end up with a very protracted, very bloody and difficult, drawn-out ground war, which not just includes the trench warfare at the front, but the battle for Kuwait City, and that would be very difficult indeed. As always, of course, in life, this we'll probably be somewhere in the middle. I think we'll get a high number of surrenders, but there will be pockets of heavy resistance, which will be difficult for us to deal with. But we would hopefully fight so that we don't have to close, so there won't be the hand-to-hand, bayonet-to-bayonet sort of combat, but we will stand off and use our capability of range and distance firepower from tanks and artillery and indeed even handheld equipment by the ground forces to just wear them down. But it still could be difficult. But I think it'll be that sort of in the middle there, where there'll be a lot of people surrendering because they've had terrible privation and appalling casualties over quite a long period of time and must be exhausted. But there'll still be some who will want to fight to the death. And so it's not going to be easy.
What's your political reading? Do you think there's any chance for a settlement between now and tomorrow?
Well, one always hesitates to say anything with politics concerned, but I would have thought it unlikely because I cannot see that the Iraqis can capitulate in the way that we are demanding, provided President Bush is able to hold the Allied line to the very consistent, there will be no ceasefire until there's been a withdrawal, and Saddam Hussein must agree to implement UN resolutions and so on. Provided that is held, Saddam Hussein will not give up, and we will have to go in and we'll have to take Kuwait.
You think the requirements that the coalition forces have made for a resolution, that Saddam Hussein would never accept that now?
Well, put it slightly differently, I don't believe that we can possibly accept a situation where, as with the Soviet proposal, where we can be in it where Saddam can say, I will withdraw two-thirds of my troops, leaving 200,000 of them in Kuwait, and we can then abandon sanctions and we all go back to business as usual, and I promise I'll get my troops out later. This is a man who is known to be a smart game player, to be a master of deception, and we would then find ourselves in a position where in a month's time, after he's got his troops out, the weather is too hot for us to fight, and we are then having to wait until next winter before we can go into Kuwait to remove the rump of his forces. That is clearly completely unacceptable. So we have to make demands that fit in with our timetable, not with his. And that means acting immediately, not next month, not in the next 6 weeks, but now. And that means he's got to give up right now. And I don't have any sense that he sees he's in that position. I think he still sees he's going to salvage victory out of defeat.
James Adams, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
James Adams is defense correspondent for the Sunday Times of London and author of the book Engines of War, Merchants of Death and the New Arms Race. This is Fresh Air.